Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Galactic Survey by Richard F. Wayand, narrated by Derek Scholes. The Propulsion Problem. Chen Chao-Li reviewed her project plan before the staff meeting. The biggest problem with her project plan was that she was soon going to fall off the end of it. They could now routinely make transition to hyperspace and back with the probe they had. Instrumentation readings had allowed them to fine-tune the cooling issues with the hyperspace field generator. They had a heat map and a graph of the heat over time for the transitions they had made, and that allowed getting cooling only where it was needed, when it was needed. They had also learned they could reduce the hyperspace field strength while the probe was in hyperspace, and still protect the probe from the corrosive effect hyperspace had on ordinary matter. Reducing the field strength to only 10% or so of the field they needed for the transition had also reduced the problems cooling the hyperspace field generator. Finally, stress monitors on the structure of the probe had given them more information about how close to the planet they could transition the probe without gravitational shear forces tearing the probe apart. They no longer needed to have the probe spend 4 days traveling away from Arcadia to get to a safe spot to transition. They were down to less than a day. Now, if they could only figure out how to move the damn thing once it was in hyperspace. Without that, there was no hyperspace drive. And without a hyperspace drive, there was no project plan. Chen Jimin, Chao Li's husband and the theoretical lead on the hyperspace project, was also preparing for the staff meeting. His hyperspace mathematics team had made a lot of progress tightening up the mathematics using the data the probe was bringing back every trip. Jimin had built up a hyperspace mathematics team around himself for the last 10 years. He had worked initially with Carl Burtz, the head of the University of Arcadia Mathematics Department, and then with Burtz's replacement when Burtz retired, Ivan Volodin. Together, they had sought out any children in Arcadia with the mathematics skills to contribute to the program. 120 years after the founding of the colony, the population was approaching 20 million people, over half of them under 16 years old. Large families and marrying young had combined to provide such a large population pool, and Jimin, Burtz, and Volodin had found several wild talents to whom they offered full scholarships to the hyperspace math program. That long-term investment was paying off now, and Jimin had a seasoned team of young applied mathematicians to help advance the mathematical formalism of hyperspace. They were developing a very good model of what hyperspace was and what it wasn't, how it worked, and how they could use it. Carl Hunnemann, the engineering lead on the hyperspace project, was also preparing for the staff meeting. With the data coming in from the probe trips into hyperspace and back, his team had been busy doing what engineers do for a living. Cost reduce, optimize, simplify. They were ready to go with a simpler, more reliable, reduced-cost probe design. This probe would be able to transfer into and out of hyperspace with much less energy expenditure and risk than the existing design. They could get it into hyperspace and get it back anytime they wanted. The one thing they couldn't figure out was how to make the probe move once it got there.
"All right, gentlemen," Chao Li said when Hunnemann and Jimin were seated. "Let's get started."
She opened her project book to her notes for the meeting.
"I guess first up is current status. Go ahead, Jimin."
Jimin summarized the progress the hyperspace math group had made in refining their formalism, using the data from the probe. They had incorporated all the latest data, and from their mathematics, could now replicate the data. That is, their math was predictive of the data.
"Excellent," Chao Li said. "Thank you. All right, Carl, you're up."
Hunnemann summarized the engineering progress, the optimization they had done on the in-progress design of a new generation of probe to replace the original probe, which was getting pretty long in the tooth by this point. They would have to replace it soon, and the engineering team was pretty close to finalizing the next-generation device. The next-generation device would also include a cockpit, to be used first for animal testing, then for human occupancy.
"Excellent," Chao Li said.
She consulted her notes.
"We are now left to consider the future, gentlemen. All this progress is fine, if what we are aiming for is to be able to transition probes back and forth to hyperspace. What it doesn't solve is how to get the probe to exit hyperspace somewhere other than where it went in. The floor is open for ideas."
"Well, that has always been the problem, Chao Li," Hunnemann said. "We have considered a number of alternatives there. A reaction drive like a rocket is impossible, because the reaction mass will simply bounce off the hyperspace field and fill up the field envelope with its exhaust. We can't use some kind of impeller outside the field, because even if we could figure out how to have anything connected to the probe outside the hyperspace field, anything outside the field will be destroyed by hyperspace. It's like trying to row a boat in a lake of acid. The oars will disintegrate. The only contact we have with hyperspace is the hyperspace field itself. Jimin started at Hyunmin's last sentence, and his eyes were unfocused as he stared at the conference table.
Jimin?
Chowli asked. Jimin held up a finger, his wait-a-minute signal, and Chowli was content to wait. When Hyunmin looked like he was going to say something, Chowli held up a quelling hand. After a couple of minutes, Jimin stirred.
There is a possibility, I think, he said. Carl said it correctly. The only contact we have with hyperspace is the field itself. But there is a possibility there, I think. We can modulate the strength of the field differently in different places. How does that result in a drive, Jimin? Chowli asked. Consider. We know that hyperspace exerts a pressure on the hyperspace field. The size of the field envelope shrinks when the probe enters hyperspace. It is this pressure that dictates how strong of a field we must maintain while in hyperspace. The field envelope must remain larger than the probe itself. Right, I'm with you so far, Chowli said,
and Hyunmin nodded. Leaving the hyperspace generator on once in hyperspace had been a source of contention between Jimin and Hyunmin at the beginning of the project.
All right, so if we made the hyperspace field have a variable strength along its length, concentric rings of higher field strength, like rings on a cat's tail, then the pressure field would be ribbed along its length from the pressure. Okay, I can see that. Hyperspace is not solid, but the energy density has a viscosity of sorts. If we have those stronger portions flow from the front of the field to the back and make the field strength ripple along the field, that should result in a thrust against hyperspace.
Fuck. That's brilliant, Hyunmin said. Chowli gave him a sharp glance and he shrugged. Jimin, he said, can we make the areas of stronger field be a spiral and rotate it like a screw? Jimin thought about it a minute.
Yes, I think so. But if you rotate it like a screw, the probe will counter-rotate.
Perfect.
What are you thinking, Carl?
Chowli asked. Hyunmin was in his element now, and he was animated as he spoke.
If we build large, human-occupied ships, one problem is weightlessness. Some people can handle it, some can't. We know that from our shuttle experience. And even for those who can handle it, medium to long term, it's a problem. Bone loss, muscle atrophy, all that sort of thing. But if we make a cylindrical ship where the humans live in the outer portion of the cylinder, we can get apparent gravity by spinning the ship. So we do the screw thing until we get the ship spinning for the gravity we want. Then we do the ripple thing the rest of the trip. Solves both problems, propulsion and gravity.
Chowli looked at Jimin, and he was nodding as Hyunmin finished.
Yes, that should work, Jimin said. It will take some serious modifications to the hyperspace field generator, but I think we can do all of that. We'll have to work out the details, Carl.
Of course, but now we have a direction. That is, if you approve, Chowli.
Solving both problems at once? Of course I approve. It seems to me, though, that the ripple effect should be first. Let's see if we can make the probe come out somewhere other than where it went in. That would tell us a lot.
Yes, Jimin said. It would give us some better numbers on the ratio of distances between corresponding points in hyperspace and normal space. Our multiplier. We're guessing right now.
Hyunmin clapped his hands.
All right, now we're getting somewhere.
Somewhere indeed, Chowli said. That, of course, is the other question. If we can solve the propulsion problem and build hyperspace-capable ships, where do we go?
To Earth, I imagine, Hyunmin said. And to the other colonies.
Which are where, Carl? Chowli asked.
Yeah, that's a problem, isn't it? Hyunmin said.
I think we can locate the first two, Jimin said. We have the records of the view screens from the passenger containers the original colonists came here in, so there are views in multiple directions for the first two colony ships. We should be able to locate them from star parallax and location, within 100 light years or so, perhaps less. The other 21 colonies could be anywhere. That's our next problem, then, Chowli said, figuring out how to find them.
There may be some documentation of them in the archives. If not, we're going to need some sort of exoplanet scanner, Jimin said.
We have plans for the ones the colony headquarters used to find the colony planets, Hunemin said. But there are a lot of possible planets. We can't just scan planets and say, oh, there's a colony.
No, we'll have to do some sort of galactic survey to find them, Chali said. That's a longer-term problem, but it's something you should be working on, Jimin.
Chao Li checked her notes for the meeting.
All right, that's all I had this week. Thank you, gentlemen.
The Destination Problem. When Jimin got back to his office in the Chen Hall of Science, he called his hyperspace math team together. He explained the ideas for what he was thinking of as the ripple drive and the screw drive to them and set them to the task of working out a first pass of how to modulate the hyperspace field. Jimin wanted to take on the destination problem. The first step was to locate those other two colonies. Jimin got in touch with the head of the astronomy department and set up a meeting for that afternoon. Aaron Barkley, the head of the astronomy department, knew Chen Jimin. Everyone in the Chen Hall of Science, most everyone in the university, knew the famous mathematician. In Barkley's case, though, Chen Jimin had occasionally helped them out with thorny math problems that came up in their astronomy work. So Barkley was happy to meet with him. The meeting was, at Jimin's request, in Jimin's office.
Jimin, how are you? Barkley asked.
Very good, Aaron. Come in. Sit down.
Jimin waved to a guest chair and Barkley sat down.
What can I do for you today? Barkley asked.
I have a little problem for you, Aaron.
Indeed, for us. Well, maybe for once we can return the favor for the help you've given us over the years. What have you got?
We want to locate the first two colonies dropped off by the interstellar transporter 120 years ago, Amber and Earthsea.
My understanding was that we didn't know where the other colonies were, Jimin.
We don't, Aaron. At least, not officially. But I've been looking through the archives, and I found the viewscreen recordings for the passenger containers that brought the original colonists to Arcadia.
Jimin gestured to the three-dimensional display in the rear portion of his office. A section of the Orion arm of the Milky Way appeared in the display.
The Earth, of course, is here, Jimin said, pointing. And Arcadia is here, about 3,000 light-years away.
Barkley nodded.
We can assume, I think, that the other colonies were similarly separated, Jimin said. That is, there was more emphasis placed on having very congenial planets for colonization than that they were close to Earth.
Yes, I've heard that theory. Makes sense to me.
Now, the transporter dropped off 24 colonies. That was the plan, at least. The Arcadia colonists were dropped off third. The viewscreens of the passenger containers captured the sky above each of the first two drop-offs, and the multiple containers were pointed in different directions. Someone thought to preserve those viewscreen recordings, and I found them in the archives.
Images of the viewscreen recordings began to cycle in the display, about one every 3 seconds.
You did? Why, that's extraordinary, Jimin, Barkley said. I had no idea we had anything of the kind. What I need you to do for me, Aaron, is to find out where those colonies are, from a parallax analysis, from those multiple views. Do you think you can do that?
Of course. Why, if I had known we had those images, I dare say we would have done it already, just because.
Barkley watched the viewscreen images cycle in the display. He was clearly anxious to get started.
Excellent. I would appreciate it, Aaron.
Barkley turned from the display to Jimin.
You planning on sending someone to those colonies, Jimin?
Eventually, Aaron. That's the plan. Eventually.
Barkley turned back to the display.
Wouldn't that be something? He said.
With the astronomy department dispatched on the problem of locating Amber and Earthsea, Jimin turned his attention to the rest of the colonies, the transporter's drop-offs after Arcadia. In the library's archives, Jimin went into the colony headquarters' records. It all the records up to the time the transporter had left Earth. Literally everything. Recordings of meetings, documents of all sorts, shuttle schedules, supplies listings, who the suppliers were, delivery schedules. It went on and on. There were listings of the colony names, the first drop-offs, Amber and Earthsea, Arcadia, and the ones that came after Arcadia and the drop-offs, Aruba, Avalon, Atlantis, Bali, Dorado, Endor, Fiji, Hawaii, New Earth, Nirvana, Numenor, Olympia, Playa, Quant, Samoa, Spring, Summer, Tahiti, Terminus, Tonga, and Western S. But there was no listing of the colony's physical locations. Anywhere. How curious was that? It couldn't have been accidental, Jimin decided. The locations of the other colonies had not just been unknown to the colonists. They had been deliberately obscured, which made it really difficult for them to travel to the other colonies once they had hyperspace ships completed. Maybe that was the whole point of obscuring them. But these were Earth records, copied to the colony library before they left. Did that mean Earth did not know where the colonies were either? It seemed incredible to Jimin. What could be the motivation behind such a move? And who could have enforced it? Dozens, maybe hundreds of people must have known. Jimin broke for the day with more questions than answers. Jimin and Chao Li rode the Arcadia Boulevard bus home together in the evening, as was their habit. They were both dressed in office clothes, he in a tropical print shirt and slacks, taking his cue from the former head of the math department, Klaus Bortz, she in a business suit appropriate for the head of the project. They didn't speak of business matters in the public venue of the bus, because everything they were working on was secret. When they got home, Le Tao, their second child and bank baby, was stir-frying dinner. At 15, she was working now, too, but she worked in the uptown market across the street and got home much earlier. Jimin and Chao Li changed into lava lavas, and dinner was ready when they came back to the kitchen. Their eldest daughter, Chao Ping, had married Zhu Ming last year, so it was just the six of them for dinner now. Jimin, Chao Li, Le Tao, and 12-year-old twin boys, Yan Ming and Yan Jing, and their youngest son, Jie Jun, who was now 8. Dinner was all family talk about school for the boys and work in school for Le Tao. Everyone helped clean up after dinner, and then the boys were off to their room. Le Tao also excused herself to her room to do schoolwork.
"You seem distracted," Chao Li said once the kids were gone. "I am having some trouble finding data in the archives," Jimin said. "Something wrong with the archives or the search tools?" "No, that's all fine. The data simply isn't there." "Is it data that should be there?" Chao Li asked. "I would think so. We know, for example, that there's nothing in the archives for the Lakeshore Drive. I looked for that years ago, and it makes sense that it was a secret, because it has a huge potential as a weapon. I've always been surprised, though, that Earth hasn't been here, hasn't stopped by, either as conqueror or friend. They had the Lakeshore Drive, right? They could stop by at some point, but they haven't. Now I am wondering if they can." "What do you mean?" Chao Li asked. "What if they don't know where we are?" "How could they not know where we are? They dropped us off here, right?" "Yes and no," Jimin said. "Someone from Earth dropped us off here. Someone from colony headquarters. But the copies of the Earth archives of the colony project do not contain the data for the locations of the colonies. Someone dropped us off, yes. But it appears they may have kept exactly where a secret." "That's incredible." "Yes, and now I wonder if Earth even has the Lakeshore Drive. Perhaps they kept that a secret too. Used the Lakeshore Drive to drop us all off, and then destroyed it. In any case, neither of those pieces of information are in our copy of the Earth's archives. Anywhere."
"So now what do you do?" Chao Li asked.
"One obvious thing is to figure out what other data is missing."
"But how do you do that? Do you know it should be there? How do you figure out what is missing if you don't know what should be there?"
"I don't know," Jimin said. "I suppose one way is to look at everything I can, follow my nose until I run into a gap I can recognize."
He thought about it for a bit.
"Another thing might be to look at the people who started the whole project, see if I can find out what their actual goals were, to see if I can find the motive to hide things."
He shrugged.
"Really, I just don't know."
The next day, Jimin spent the morning following the first path. He set the display to project documents and to read them to him while he watched and let them wash over him. Whenever Jimin found something interesting, he would pause that document and open another on the new interesting thing he had seen. He then let that document wash over him until he found something interesting, open a new document, and continue. Jimin was performing something of a random walk through the colony program documents, not knowing what he was looking for, but hoping he recognized it when he saw it. Or that a later integration of what he had seen would change his view of the project and bring some enlightenment. Jimin spent the entire morning viewing documents in this way. One thing was clear. The colony effort was a massive undertaking. The sheer scope of the effort across the entire planet's economy was staggering. In the afternoon, Jimin found the other tack, researching the backgrounds of the people who had dreamed up and pushed the project in the first place. These weren't at all obvious on first glance. Jimin had to dig back into the project, to its earliest days, to the earliest planning. A number of big corporations had been involved. Russ Porter, the CEO of Colorado Manufacturing Corporation, had been involved. Ted Burke, billionaire industrialist and the majority owner of a number of large companies, including Lunar Mining and Materials, had been involved. And computer innovator Bernd Decker had been involved. Others had come along later, but these three were there very early on in the project. Jimin began reviewing the biographies and writings of these three men, who seemed to be there from the very beginning of the project. They were all public men, and there was a lot of material, including articles they had written, speaking engagements, and interviews. What had been their purpose, their real purpose, and had they achieved it? Jimin had a gift. Once his mind had seen enough of the pieces of a puzzle, the picture would snap together. He called these reorderings of things in his mind integrations, for lack of a better term. He didn't know how his gift worked, and he was afraid to look into it too deeply, lest he break it. But Jimin knew how his mind worked and how to use it. As he'd gotten older, he had also gotten patient. If his mind didn't produce an integration right away, it was because it didn't have enough data. Day after day, Jimin viewed document after document. In the mornings, those about the later stages of the project, and in the afternoons, those about or written by the people involved from the very beginning of the project. Jimin was 2 weeks into his review of project documents when the first integration came. It was Friday night when he had set the project aside for the weekend. He and Chao Li had just finished making love, and he lay in the afterglow. That was a familiar time for an integration, as his mind was completely off his project and the integration could come freely. All of a sudden, he had it. A piece of it, anyway. Jimin got up and went over to the big armchair in their bedroom and started writing furiously in his notebook. When Chao Li came back from the bathroom, and she saw him scribbling in the big armchair under the light, she knew better than to interrupt and went back to bed. The kids had left the breakfast table, and Jimin and Chao Li were sitting over their tea when she brought it up.
"Did you have an integration last night, Jimin?" "Yes, a small one anyway, about the real purpose of the project." "And what was their purpose?" "To solve the extinction event problem," Jimin said. "That isn't much of a revelation. I mean, Janice Kwan said as much in her inauguration speech on becoming World Authority Chairman. She said the goal of the project was to set mankind on a more secure footing against a global catastrophe. So it was out in the open, but you can never trust what the politician says." "Yet you think that was their actual goal?" "Yes. The industrialist Ted Burke had written or spoken about the problem prior to the beginning of the project. How one global catastrophe could be an extinction event for the human race. And the computer guy, Bernd Decker, worked on massively parallel and survivable systems. So he knew about multiply redundant systems. It just all clicked together. I had been hesitant to accept Kwan's statement as the deeper truth, but I think it was. It all ties together." "What does that mean for why they hid the data?" "I don't know yet. That work is still ongoing. No integrations there yet."
That weekend was spent on family activities. On Saturday, Jimin and Chao Li took a picnic lunch to the park with the boys, while Lei Tao was off to the beach with her boyfriend. On Sunday, Chao Ping and Zhu Ming came over for a big dinner in the early afternoon. It was nice to have everyone back together, and they spent the afternoon chatting. A quiet Sunday evening, and Jimin was back at it Monday morning. After his integration of Friday night, Jimin set aside the research into the founders of the project and concentrated on the documentation of the later stages of the project. Jimin also had to help out the rest of his hyperspace math team as they closed in on a set of recommendations for the modifications to the hyperspace field generator to implement the Ripple Drive. One of the ideas they had come up with was to vary the field strength by a greater amount on one side of the probe than the other, which would allow the device to make turns in hyperspace. G-Man helped them work out a way to do that without having to rebuild the hyperspace field generator from scratch. As a result of this other work, G-Man couldn't spend all his time on the colony project documentation, but it was his major concentration over the next 2 weeks. It would have been a curious exercise to watch G-Man work. He simply sat and stared into the three-dimensional display in his office. Text documents, videos, audio recordings played in the display, one after the other, seemingly at random. All of these played very fast, at 1.5 or 1.75 times normal speed. G-Man stared into the display and let the wave of information wash over him. G-Man, of course, was selecting which documents he would watch. He would select anything which piqued his interest. He often tagged multiple portions of something he was watching for follow-up, and then run down those strands later. As G-Man watched, he continued to be amazed at the scope of the project, at how many things had been impacted. Following the project documentation into the project's nooks and crannies, he was impressed with how thorough the effort had been, how much research had been done, how many people had been involved. As he more completely understood the full scope of the project, one question kept rising in G-Man's mind. Where the hell had all the money come from? Propulsion. Carl Hooneman looked at the specification for the hyperspace field generator that came out of Chen G-Min's hyperspace mathematics group about a month after G-Min's original conceptual breakthrough. The modifications they had made to the existing hyperspace field generator amounted to generating a standing wave within the hyperspace field, and then driving that standing wave slightly off its harmonic frequency. That would cause a standing wave to move along the hyperspace field from front to back or back to front, depending on whether one drove the standing wave slightly above or slightly below the harmonic frequency. Not only did they have a drive, they had reverse. Not a minor consideration. Slowing down would probably be smart as you approached your destination. Hooneman shook his head. Generating a standing wave in the field would not be a problem. He recalled ruefully how much work they had done to eliminate standing waves when first building the hyperspace field generator design they had. Had they not been able to get rid of the standing wave, they might have stumbled on the Ripple Drive by accident 3 years ago. Well, they had it now. He scheduled a meeting with Mikhail Borovsky to plan and schedule the work. They'd modified the original probe to allow refueling of the device in orbit. The lift to orbit of the fuel alone was much cheaper than lifting the entire fueled device every test. For the modifications, though, they sent the big space-capable cargo shuttle up to orbit to retrieve the device and bring it back to the hyperspace facility next to the Arcadia City shuttleport. With the device back on the ground, technicians set to work exposing and then modifying the hyperspace field generator. At the weekly meeting 2 weeks later, Chao Li posed a question.
Where do you stand with the hyperspace field generator modifications, Carl?
We're almost done. We should be able to launch the probe next week.
That leaves the question of the flight profile. What do you recommend?
Hooneman considered before answering.
That's something of a problem. If we turn the drive on for too long, we would have to wait quite a while to find out what happened. If we turn it on for half an hour and the probe moves 2 light months, we'll have to wait 2 months to even hear whether the probe survived. On the other hand, if we turn it on for too short a time, we don't really learn much about the multiplier, because we don't know what the delay will be before it kicks in.
G-Min stirred, and Charlie turned to him and raised an eyebrow.
I think we should separate the tests, he said. We really have 3 things to test here. 1, will the drive work to move the probe at all? 2, what is the velocity curve of the probe under the Ripple Drive relative to space-time? And 3, can we maneuver the probe in hyperspace by varying the ripple amplitude on one side of the device compared to the other? I think we should take these one at a time. Otherwise, we get into the trouble Carl suggests in setting up the tests.
Chao Li turned back to Hooneman. He was nodding.
I can sign up for that, he said. So, for the first test, we turn on the ripple drive for a minute or two and see what we get, right?
G-Min nodded.
Perhaps only for a few seconds, he said. If we can travel at 1 light year per hour, say 1 minute 6 light days away,
It would be almost a week before we heard back.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?